conflict, how to fight. We got those, right? Conflict resolution, how to fight fair. You ever, you know, I talked to one couple about this, and the husband said, well, what if I don't want to fight fair, right? Sometimes we want to inflict pain on our spouse, and no one knows what buttons to push, right? We know how to hurt deeply, deep wounds. And those wounds, you know, words won't hurt me. Oh, yeah. We remember what someone said to us 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Okay, those words. But you said, right? You ever heard that phrase? So one of the things that we want to talk about is we know relationships are broken, right? But God has said that we have this ministry and we have words that can reconcile. So instead of just having conflict and just fighting, there should be some way to resolve conflict and fight in a way. And fight sounds aggressive, but have some kind of conversation, right? That we can get an end result that doesn't fracture the relationship. So how do we get from broken to restored? But God does say that it can happen. So my goal is to give us some tools. How do we do that? Before we get to the tools, though, we need to understand a little bit about how relationships work. So I want to talk just a little bit about that. So levels of relationships. Do you have different kinds of relationships? What are some of the different kinds of relationships you have?
We have work relationships.
Okay.
Friendships?
Family? So these are different kinds of relationships with different people you interact with. Now, do you have different levels of relationships even with those people? So I come from a family that my mom had three sisters. There was four of them. So I have three aunts that had kids. And I had some cousins that I grew up with that were... I had a really good, close relationships. And I have some cousins that I can't hardly remember their name. Is the level of relationship with them different? Those cousins I don't know very well. If I see them somewhere, it's casual, right? We went to Joyce's sister's funeral, and someone came up to her and said, what's your name? And come to find out, it was a distant cousin.
Just my first cousin.
Oh, no, okay. First cousin. You guys hadn't seen each other?
Probably 35, 40 years.
But you hugged, right?
Yeah.
But it was a casual. I mean, you don't know anything about him. He knew nothing about you. And yeah, I have cousins I grew up with that I have stories about them that they wouldn't want me to tell. But they have stories about me that I wouldn't want them, right? So... there are levels. There's levels of all different kinds of relationships, from casual to very personal, right? So how do those relationships work? What do they look like? Casual, just an acquaintance, relationship, surface, don't reveal anything deep. Not going to really talk about dreams, feelings, thoughts, motivations, failures. Arm's length, right? So all kinds of casual. Sometimes you have those kinds of relationships at work. Sometimes you can make friendships at work, right, and move from casual. So the first, in dealing with conflict and how it works and how we develop to relationships beyond casual, there's a level called chaotic. So as we go from casual and we start to share some intimate details of our lives, one of the things that happens is we're different, right? And someone shares a dream that I want to have a house on the beach, right? And the person and the person responds to, well, that's silly. Why would you ever want to live on the beach? It's cold, it's windy, right? And so there's a pushback there. And so as you start to talk about these more intimate details about who you are, there's some chaos, some things that go on as we discuss. And so as we get into our feelings and we start dealing with those, instead of working through chaos, the relationship is often, it's easier to avoid, right? The relationship. And a lot of relationships get hung up here when you start moving into this little bit of conflict, this little bit of chaos, you pull back, right? And so you don't ever get into a next level. You move from casual to, okay, I'm going to trust this person, and then you move back, and you can never get a more intimate relationship. A lot of relationships get hung up here. It remains either in this chaotic state or it reverts back. So as you start to work through some of the chaos, what happens is you start to accept the person for who they are. And so that's a whole different level of this chaotic or chaos. And so there's an acceptance there for who they are. You start to appreciate their values, their feelings, their dreams, their aspirations. And not only do you start to accept them, you start to cheer them on. And so there is this level, you go from casual to tell me about your feelings. Or when you ask, in a casual relationship, when you ask somebody, how's your day? And they start telling you, you're thinking, not what I meant. But if you are in an acceptance relationship and you ask your husband or your wife when they came home, said, I had a tough day. Acceptance. I want to know how you feel. So in order to know how you feel, you have to tell me, and I accept that you have a bad day. I'm not saying, sorry I asked, right? Sometimes you ask somebody in a casual relationship, how are you doing? And they will tell you, and you don't want to know, right? But in an acceptance, it's a whole new level. You really do. Does that make sense? And so you want, and the relationship can only move out of this chaotic to this acceptance when you accept the person for who they are. When you're not always fighting against, how was your day? Well, it was a bad day. Well, why did you do that? What you're saying is it's your fault. You're pushing back. You're not going to get acceptance by implying it's their fault, right? Does that make sense? And then we have this genuine intimacy from the standpoint, and I know we've used the word intimacy sometimes in talking about sex, and I'm not talking about sex here. I'm talking about intimacy from truly knowing the person, what they're about, what their aspirations are, what makes them tick, what makes them upset, all those things. And so these are the four different levels. And here's the first question. Where is your relationship? I know some married people who have a casual relationship. And I know some people who have a marriage relationship that are chaotic, chaos, and it is always... They know how to fight, they know how to conflict, and so they move from fighting to moving away, to fighting to casual, fighting to... They never, ever get to acceptance. And I know people who have had acceptance, but never have gotten to the point of sharing and encouraging one another and having true, genuine intimacy. Someone who this genuine knowing this person, you know their faults, you know their failures, and you decide they're okay. And you can be who you are and feel appreciated for who you are. That's even a level of beyond acceptance. Does that make sense? Hindrances. There are three things that get in the way of us getting to genuine intimacy. Self, right? Me. I stand in the way. We've been going through the book of James on Wednesdays, and we just went through the fourth chapter. And from whence comes wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence even of your lusts and wars and remembers? This has to be talking about lost people, right? Talking about saved church people, right? And marriage people. So why do you have all these wars? You lost. It's all about me. You're never going to get to acceptance. You can't accept the other person if you're always pushing your agenda, right? And so this being selfish is a huge hindrance. You're never going to get to genuine intimacy and accept the other person for who they are and be accepted for who you are if all you're ever doing is promoting yourself. Control. Not just being selfish. I want what I want. I am going to get what I want. But control is trying to control the other person. A lot of people marry thinking they are going to control or they're going to change the other person. Remember what acceptance was? It has to do with knowing them, and it's okay who they are. Not that I want to change you, not that I want to control you. We're different. And if you're wanting to control your mate, good luck with that, first of all. Right? Nobody wants to be controlled. The whole point is two independent people bringing who and what they are together to be one, not for one person to control the other, but making our love, our dreams, our aspirations one, and supporting one another in those to win. Winning is a problem. We live in a society of win and lose. We our kids grow up winning and losing in sports and in all kinds of things. One of the problems in this idea of to win is how we tend to keep score. So one of the things that I have learned in talking to people is that we want, you know, you do things for me and I'll do things for me. Yeah. Truly, that's how it works, right? That's how it works. So you do things for me, I do things for you, and then we keep score. But one of the things that happens is that you get baseball scores. So how you get a score in baseball, you got to get to first base. So you do one good thing, that's first base. Four good things equals. But when I do something good, touchdown, right? So I do one, it's 7 points. You do four, you get 1 point, right? One of the things I found is anytime you get a relationship that's keeping score, it's never fair. I do not do what I do. Remember, we talked about that crazy cycle, and we talked about the ultimate cycle where I meet her needs regardless of her meeting my needs. Does that make sense? And so there is no score. If I do 10 things to her one, it's my responsibility to love her. And relationships are going to change. I have been the last month, my mind, every second, has been trying to work on this. And it's like, well, what's the big deal, Brother Harlan? You've only spoken, this is your third hour, what's the big deal, right? Well, there's been a lot of preparation, right? And so there's been times in which I've been preoccupied and I have not put as much attention into our relationship. I haven't ignored it, right? And Joyce has probably done more in the last month towards me. But when this is over, right, my focus, and she knows that that happens. Sometimes Joyce will have a project at work and, you know, she'll work really long hours and sometimes have to work the weekend, and she's not able to put any effort into it. That's okay, because I know that's going to change, because I know she wants to, right? Does that make sense? This to-win issue, one of the problems is you can't keep score. It's your obligation, your responsibility to meet your spouse's needs, and that's not a win or lose. The other thing is, the issue of this win, I wanted to look at my notes because I want to make sure I word this right. If you win, someone loses. If I win, let's say it's an argument, and I win, Joyce is the loser. And now I have to be in a relationship with her. Now who loses? She's going to inflict, right? She's not going to say, oh, honey, you're such a great winner, right? I don't like being a loser, right? So the thing is, if there's a winner, there is a loser. Then you lose. And then the relationship loses, right? You can never go into a conflict with the idea that I will win. Now, sometimes we as guys, we attack things that, and hey, ladies can be competitive too. I know a few of you, right? And, you know, if you win, you lose. Your relationship loses. We're not dealing with how to win a fight. We're dealing with how to resolve conflict so that we can move beyond the chaotic state of conflict and fighting to acceptance and genuine intimacy. Does that make sense? A couple of cartoons that kind of... I'm right. Yeah, me too. So how do you get beyond this? That's going to be pretty chaotic, right? How do you move beyond that relationship? The only winner of a fight should be your relationship. Does that make sense? I like that. The object is to find a better way. How does our relationship win? Not you be a loser, not I be a loser, someone be a winner. We have to somehow move beyond whatever this conflict is. Working through the chaos creates conflict. Conflict is not bad. Tom used this verse, right? Iron sharpens iron. Conflict isn't bad. Unresolved conflict, right? Joyce and I have had lots of fights, conflict. We have lots of unresolved. I'm thankful for those unresolved. I'm thankful for those resolved conflicts. It's the unresolved ones that create issues, right? When we talk about the his needs, her needs, Sherry asks, well, what about love? What about respect? It's not an issue if it's being met, and so we can move on to some of those that aren't being met, that create conflict for us. Conflict is like fire, and it's interesting. You think fire? Well, how is it like fire? Well, fire can illuminate, right? It can bring things to light. Joyce can share something with me that is a need, and it can bring it to my surface so I can now meet that need, right? And I can ask some questions, we can have some conflict over it, but it can illuminate so that we can resolve an issue. Or conflict can consume. There's a lot of relationships that are stuck in this conflict that it consumes, stuck in the same old fight, not ever able to move on and to resolve whatever the conflict is. The problem is not conflict, but the way that we deal with it. Dr. John Gottman at the University of Washington has done research on how people fight and can, with a 94% accuracy, predict if a marriage will last or end in divorce. And it's not how often or how frequently someone fights, a relationship fights or has conflict, not a specific style of fighting. Different styles can get you to the same place. Not even what we fight about. They've identified four actions that repeatedly appear in a marriage that they can predict will end in divorce. At this research center, they bring a couple into a lab, like made up into a little apartment, literally with glass walls, and they live there for a day hooked up to biofeed monitors with people observing. And the monitors, they monitor a conflict that the couple have and compile all this information. He's been doing this for almost 30 years. They have more than three decades with 94% accuracy. There are four red flags. They call these the fatal four. No relationship can survive these. And I want you to understand, when I talk about relationships, I'm not talking about husband and wife. I'm talking about any relationship. These four types of behavior will destroy parent-child, friendships. Any kind of relationship cannot survive these four things. Criticism. Being critical. We all know criticism when we hear it. You. Where have you been? You, often always, right? You, always. We know criticism when we hear it. And then when we have criticism, what do we want to do? Get defensive, right? And then we start being defensive. Criticism provokes a defense. When we feel attacked, our natural response. When you always make us late, incites the response, it's not my fault. If you would help me, would never be late, right? So now we're not talking about what the problem is. There's a criticism and now there's a defense. There's nothing to resolve. Does that make sense? We can't resolve a you. So if I'm the problem, the only way to resolve it is to remove me from the equation. That's divorce. That's not resolution. And then we have contempt. Contempt is an extension of criticism, but taken to a new level. Not only is an action being criticized, but contempt is a judgment on character, the character of a person. Contempt can include name-calling, right? Involves tone of voice or nonverbal gestures, as in even a sigh. You see, it's like, you're so ridiculous. You are. It's criticism with contempt, with judgment of the person. And a relationships can't survive. Parents, when your children reach teenage age and they sigh or they roll their eyes, you get what they're telling you, right? It's contempt of you. And criticizing not just what you're doing, but your character, right? And it's tough. And we need to help them understand that it's one thing to disagree. I wanted my children to know they didn't always have to agree with me. At least that's what I told them. Really, I really did believe that, right? But you can't have contempt, right? You can't hate my character. I'm still your parent, right? So if you're going to have a relationship, relationships cannot survive this. 94% accuracy, if they see any one criticism enough is enough. Alone is enough. Defensiveness is enough. Contempt, and contempt is bad, right? We can get that, but they're all bad. And then another one is stonewalling. And stonewalling is simply pretty much not showing up. Men sometimes do this, but women can do this too. Men often are a little bit quicker. Women, it's easy to criticize, where men tend to just shut down. Not always, but sometimes. And the response could be something like this. Okay, just tell me what you want me to do. Okay, just tell me what you want me to do. We've already fought 30 minutes. Just tell me what you want. I don't mean it, and I'm probably not going to do it, right? I just want to end. I'm bringing it to an end. There is a wall put up. We're not going any farther. Can simply just walk out. Just simply end the conversation. Tell me what you want to do. Or how about this? Whatever. How do you deal with that, right? You can't. It's stonewalling. It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what you do. I'm done. Just tell me what you want to do. I'm done. I want to get it over with. I'm not really, we're not resolving anything. I'm just conceding because you're not going to win. Whatever. Okay, you're right. Okay, you're wrong, but I'm conceding you're right just so you can leave me alone. We can move on, but you can't move on from that. Does that make sense? Nothing ever gets resolved. This article is from Reader's Digest. I get all my marriage counseling ideas from Reader's Digest. It's pretty good ideas in there sometimes. Happy marriage couples behave like good friends. Well, that makes sense, right? How to resolve conflict. Studies of couples discussing conflict demonstrates this. So what does it demonstrate? Spouses in happy, stable marriages made 5 positive remarks for every 1 negative remark when they discuss conflict. So we're not always criticizing you. Somewhere there has to be I like you statements. You do something. 5 positive versus 1 negative when you're in conflict. Think about that. In contrast, couples headed for divorce offer less than 1 positive, 0.8 to be exact, for every single negative remark. Happy married couples handle conflict in a more gentle, positive way. They listen respectfully to each other and find compromise that works for both of them. Resolving conflict. This is an interesting verse. It offers a lot of advice. Slow to wrath. Anger is tough in a marriage. Anger is an emotion, right? We're emotional beings. The problem with anger, the Bible says, be angry and sin not, right? So it is possible, but here's the problem that happens with anger. You make me so mad. And when I get mad, I use that as a license to say and do something that I would not say and I would not do when I'm not so angry. So then what we do is we say, yeah, but I was angry, I didn't mean it. But here's the problem. You've said it, and if you said it, you thought it. And if that's what you think of me, right? And if you did it, you thought about it. So down deep, I believe you really did mean it. And now, the problem is, it feels like now is when you're being honest, the only time I can trust you to really tell me what you really think is when you're angry. Slow to wrath. Anger can get us in all kinds of problems. I think I've never had a huge anger problem, but sometimes I have a short fuse. And it's not that I blow up, but when I get angry, a lot of people don't even know I'm angry, but you're not going to win. I may not win, but you're not going to win. I had a conference, Joyce and I had a conference with one of Joshua's teachers. And he made me angry. I can't remember his response. You remember what his response was? Oh, man. And I knew I was angry. I don't think he knew I was angry. And I turned to Josh and I said, Joshua, go wait for us out in the hallway. And Joshua was like, what? And the teacher was like, we're just having a conversation. So I had Joshua go outside. And the teacher wasn't going to win. And I ended up getting what I wanted from him. After it was done, and I didn't regret, I wanted Joshua out. I didn't want him to be involved in the process. But I wish I would have waited. There's something I've learned about anger. What I wish I'd have said to the teacher is, can we schedule a time for us to talk about this later? Because what I said, I pushed really hard. And anytime he started to speak, I cut him off. Because I was going to get, right? Some people in anger respond, yelling, whatever. You're going to get your way. Anger makes you're going to win. And there's going to be a loser. Does that make sense? And there's something I've learned about anger. 99% of the time, if it's worth saying, I can say it 10 minutes from now when I'm no longer angry. I can say it tomorrow when I'm no longer angry. I can say it a week from now when I'm no longer angry. If I would have asked that teacher to schedule something in a day, in a week, I believe he'd have done that. And I believe we could have came to the same resolution. The problem is, the way I got us there, I was angry. I don't feel good about that. Does that make sense? I'm a pastor, and I had a conflict with this guy that I didn't have to make. I mean, we got there by his actions, but I could have resolved it differently. Does that make sense? I didn't have to be angry when I did it. I hope that makes sense. Whether you're yelling, whatever, anger can get you into all kinds of problems. So you did a, Brother Tom had us do a rate, right? It's in your book. It's on page 33. And we didn't have you discuss that because what we want to do is we want to talk about, so refer back to page 33 in your book. So the other thing about James, it's anger, but it also says swift to hear, slow to speak. We can resolve conflict with information. We're not always right. And when we speak first, usually it's a matter we're wanting to control the person in the situation. So let everyone, swift to hear, listen first, speak second, and be careful with your anger. So as you look at your list, there. So were you able to fill out the list? Was it easy? Was it hard? It was hard. Okay. And some of these lists are hard, right? So choices in conflict, right? How we fight, the criticism, the stonewalling, those kinds of things we need to be careful of. So here are some ideas on how to deal with some of those things. The very first thing in dealing with something is one issue versus many issues. What happens in a fight is, I don't like it when you make us late. Okay, so the issue is being late. What can we do so that you aren't late, so we can be on time? So that is the issue. And then we could talk about, well, yeah, but you work and you were doing this. And so we start bringing in all these many issues, and nothing is ever going to get resolved. We have to focus on the one issue. So he had you rank them, and you work on number one. Let's say it's technology. One of the things that we were at dinner, and we saw an older couple. They were 80 plus, and they were sitting across from each other. He had his phone. She had her phone. Put it down when their food came. Ate. Picked up the phone when they're done. Never talked. Joyce made the comment, it's not an age issue, right? Yeah. So one of the things we've done is with technology, we don't do phones at dinner. Once in a while, we'll have to check our appointments at the same time, or a text comes we need to look at. But there are some things you can do, but a single issue, not only cell phone use, but when would be a good time for me not to use my cell phone? Let me give you a compromise, right? No cell phones at dinner. 1 hour in the evening, right? We got to get that 1 hour versus 47 hours. We got to. So one issue versus many issues. The problem, not the person. This is a biggie. Criticism, right? Deal with the problem, not the character. I can fix the problem, but I can't fix who I am. If you don't like me as a person, why are we in this relationship, right? Does that make sense? Behavior versus character kind of go to the same thing. Specifics, you can see these all kind of have the same thing. Got to be specific. Feelings versus judgment. You should always be willing to say, this is how, when you do this, this is how it makes me feel. I'm going to give you that in a little formula here in a little bit. I statements, I feel versus you. You're not going to get anywhere. You is a judgment statement. Observing facts, not motives. Okay, judgment of motives is a character. You're flawed, and so that's why you do this. This is when you do this behavior, this is how it makes me feel. I feel this way. We'll talk a little bit more about that. And what we're after is mutual understanding versus winning, losing. No one wins, everybody loses. Choices. Choices in conflict. We don't want to just stop fighting, but we want to bring the relationship back to genuine intimacy. The Bible talks about how we do this. Forgiveness, right? If any man have a quarrel, what should we do? At some point, even if we get a resolution, oftentimes people can't forgive and can't move on. Moreover, if a brother trespass against thee, go tell it to him between thee and he. And if he hear thee, you got to resolve conflict. That's what Jesus is teaching there. How to resolve conflict. how to fight fair. Therefore, if anyone bring thy gift to the altar, thou rememberest that thy brother have aught against thee. Leave there thy gift before the altar and go thy way. First be reconciled. Jesus taught reconciliation, didn't he? He not only expected us to be reconciled to God, he expects us to be reconciled to one another. We can have resolved conflict. These are in the book. I'll go through them real quickly. But forgiveness is a big deal, but it's not easy. It's not easy. It's not pretending something didn't happen or that it didn't hurt. You can't ignore it, right? It did happen. And if somebody has sinned against you, it had to have hurt. Forgiveness is not conditional. I will forgive you if you do this, or I can take it back up. It's not forgetting. You probably won't ever forget that hurt. And forgiveness is not impossible. It is possible. What forgiveness is, what it looks like. We're instructed to do it. Jesus said to forgive, right? Why did God command us? Because he knows it's not easy, right? It's an attitude of letting go the resentment and my right to get even. I want you to dwell on that a second. That's what forgiveness is. So when God forgave us, we were condemned for hell, separated forever. And when he forgave us, he no longer has the right to send us to hell. Now, I don't mean that to sound bad, but that's what God has agreed to. That's what he has said. So when we let go, right, I can no longer resent you for what you did, and I can no longer get even. Payback is not an option once we have forgiven somebody. An action that must be expressed by words and deeds. I release you. A choice to set the other one free from the penalty of the debt owed. Seeking forgiveness. Some people struggle with this, so I wrote this out. Literally what to say, how to seek it, how to go about it. Be willing to admit. For God to forgive us, I have to say, God, I am a sinner, right? You can't say, Lord, I didn't do anything wrong, but save me anyway. It's not going to work. If you need forgiveness, you got to say, I'm wrong. But if you wouldn't have done that, I wouldn't have been wrong, right? That's not, you see what I mean? Owning it. What I did was my actions alone. I was wrong, period. You see how we own it? It's not easy, is it? I am sorry. I was wrong, but you can't stop there. And I'm sorry I did that, and I'm sorry it caused you hurt. I'm sorry it caused these feelings, this pain that you're dealing with in our relationship. Be willing to repent. I know I have hurt you deeply. I do not wish to hurt you again this way and mean it. Doing the same thing over and over again, eventually the person's going to say, I don't believe you anymore, right? Repentance means to no longer continue the behavior. Be willing to ask forgiveness. Will you be willing? So first we say, I was wrong. I'm sorry. I hurt you. Could you, would you? I will give you time to process. I'd like forgiveness this minute, right? Stamp this card showing I'm forgiven. It may take a week. Does that make sense? Depending on the hurt. It may take a month. It may take a year. A betrayal of a relationship with a emotional affair or something. I mean, it can take a while to get this forgiveness. Granting. Privately. Probably need help from God. Lord, I forgive this person. before you tell me you forgive me, you probably need to check it out with God and get his help, because if you have a deep hurt, you may need some healing. Specifically, I forgive you for. Generously, let's settle this issue and get on with building our relationship. And it can be done. The book of Hosea is about a prophet, Hosea, who married a harlot, a prostitute. It's an incredible love story. You may think not. She ended up, even after they got married, the story tells us that she continued with other men and had children with other men that wasn't Hosea's. And God says, I want you to go and I want you to specifically forgive her, and you commit to her and she commit to you, and you tell her that you will love her. And they end up having this great relationship. God can overcome any hurt. And I'm not saying you should. I get if this happens, it would be incredible. But forgiveness can overcome anything if the person is willing to stop the action and seek forgiveness. Does that make sense? Do it graciously. I know I've done things too. We're not perfect, but may not be to the level of what the person has sinned against you. Some tools. So one of the first things in dealing with the tools is a simple XYZ formula. In situation X, when you do action, right, whatever your action, not your character, who you are is a problem for me. That's not going to work. What you do, this is how I feel. Let me give you an example. When we are driving down the road and you turn on the radio without asking me, I feel like I don't matter. Does that make sense? Instead of, who made you king of the radio? Is there going to be a fight there? So you see how the XYZ works. Scale of 1 to 10. This is a powerful tool. I had you do it in the book, right? Rate your relationship. Let's say you're a 5, right? So how do we move it? So on a scale of 1 to 10, where are we at? And then you ask, what one thing can I do to move us up a step? Right? That checking your relationship from time to time where you're at is good. And then, okay, what one thing do you need to move us from a 5 to a 6, from a 1 to a 2? You can't get from a 1 to a 10 if you miss 2 through 9, right? So what can I do? Find out where you are. Joyce and I do this all the time. We're checking where we're at. What one thing can I do? We're asking that question to one another all the time. And then the other thing, this 1 to 10, how important is it? So sometimes we'll get hung up in an argument. The other day, we talked about going to a movie. And I said to her, how important is it? And we agreed we was going to go to a movie. She said, 2, but I'll go to a movie. And she said, how important is it to you? 2, we didn't go to a movie. So sometimes that's one way to check how important something is. Here's the other thing that happens. We're fighting about something. So we're discussing something, and we're in this back and forth, and no one will relent. One of the things we learned is to ask the other person, how important is this issue to you? And she might say, oh, it's kind of important. It's a 7. And she'll say, how important is it to you? And I'll say, well, 2, but I'll fight about it. But because it's important to her, I can relent. Now, what you can't do with this, how important is it to you, is always say a 10 thinking you'll win, right? That's not fair. But one of the things is we get in a situation where we take sides. and we think we have to defend our side to win when it's not that important to one of us, and so we can just relent. And I will do this with you, knowing that next time it's more important to me, you will relent and do it with me. These are powerful tools. Date night. You wooed your wife, or you won your husband by taking him on dates, right? One of the things I found is that husbands and wives, once they get married, stop wooing. There was a song that Randy Travis sung, and it was called Pitching Woo. And it was talking about this couple dating and stuff. Do you remember this? Kids were in the car. I was playing this Randy Travis tape, and my dad is in the back, and he turns to my kids saying, "You know what pitching woo is?" And I'm like, "Dad, no!" And the kids are like, "No." He says, "It's in the barn when you're pitching manure, and you go, woo! Pitching woo!" Okay, that's safe, Dad. But you won your wife because you pursued her and dated her and did fun things together, and then we get married and we have kids, and I'm too tired to have fun, right? Marriages die because there's no more fun. Date night, once a week. And some of you are like, "You're crazy. I are you the one that got woo?" Oh, yeah. It's like, "You're crazy." Okay? Once a month minimum, folks. Bi-weekly. But I get life. There was times in which, you know, life happens, and you don't date other women. You don't break dates is what I'm trying to say. It's a priority, unless you have to in an emergency. You don't just blow them off. Here's the other thing really important about date nights. Really, really important. So a date night comes along, and I would say to Joyce, "What do you want to do?" And she'd say to me, "What do you want to do?" "I don't know. What do you want to do?" And, "Yeah, I don't know." So we solve that problem. This is how we do it. 1 week, it's hers. The next week, it's mine. She doesn't have to pick. So when I used to do dates, I would want to do something that she would enjoy, right? I'm always worried if she's going to have fun. The way we do date nights now, I don't care if she has fun. This is how it works. We go to, often on my date night, we go to basketball games. And she comes and does it because she wants to be with me, not because she likes basketball, but she does enjoy basketball. I've gone to opera, right? I went and saw Phantom of the Opera. Is that what I saw? And I wasn't sure I wanted to go, but I went because it was her date night, and I committed to her. I enjoyed it. That's kind of weird. So the idea is, you on your date night, you pick what you want to do, and they will do it with you. And the fun is, you're doing it together. Does that make sense? So on date night, if you're going to go to a restaurant, you pick, your spouse doesn't like Mexican. Well, it's okay. It's your favorite. They'll eat a hamburger, right? And the next night, you might go eat Thai food or you know, I don't know. Does that make sense? So here's a couple of things about date night. Regularly scheduled. Take turns planning. Inexpensive. Type in your phone, type in your computer, and say, 10 free things to do in Portland. 10 free things to do in Hillsboro. Go to a park. Pack a picnic lunch. It doesn't have to be expensive. Joyce and I, when we first got married, money was tight. We would go get a milkshake and sit in a car. That was date night. Doesn't have to be expensive. Go for a walk. So 20 questions you should ask your spouse once a year. It's a way to get a good, positive response. Sometimes we've dealt a lot with problems, basic needs being met, 10 marriage issues. These are positive.